Hello, folks. Welcome to another edition of the World Labor Hour, brought to you on the air by listener-supported community radio station WFT, broadcasting from downtown Champaign, Illinois. The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of the station manager, board of directors, or of Prairie Area Incorporated. Now, here's Gus with some underwriting announcements.
This hour of programming is brought to you in part by Central Illinois Jobs with Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Central Illinois Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month at 9:30 a.m. at Channing Murray Foundation, 1209 West Oregon, Urbana. For more information, visit www.centralillinoisjobswithjustice.org. Programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by listeners of WEFT and by Decatur attorney Bill Faber, who believes that the mission of the law is the safety of the people. Bill Faber proudly supports the World Labor Hour. The World Labor Hour is supported in part by listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support the community radio in East Central Illinois. The Graduate Employees Organization Union, GEO, at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign strives to not only democratically represent graduate employees, but also to give solidarity and support to other unions, organizations, and workers engaged in the struggle for social justice both on and off campus. The GEO is proud to support the World Labor Hour on WEFT Community Radio.
Okay, thank you, Gus. Okay, well, we're going to be having a caller call in at half past the hour from Carbondale, Illinois. Her name is Paula, and she happens to be the wife of Green Party gubernatorial candidate Rich Whitney, who won 11% of the vote in Illinois back about 10 years ago. The name of her program is Class Matters, so we're looking forward to her calling in. And in the meantime, there's been a lot going on. So, Gus, would you like to start off?
Yeah, of course, everybody knows that we're going to be, since we're in the state of Illinois, we have to talk about the recent news that happened this week in the murder of Laquan McDonald. For those that are not familiar with the story, because there's been a lot that's been said but hasn't been said as well, 16 bullets is what the Chicago police officer Jason Van Dyke put into the body of 17-year-old Laquan McDonald at 10 p.m. on October 20th, 2014. The video was just released, so the truth about what happened that night was covered up by the police department and the city of Chicago. So we have two culpable culprits in a terrorist act against an African-American youth: the police department of Chicago and, of course, the city of Chicago. But the release of a chilling dash cam video has exposed how nasty the murder was. And for those that haven't seen it yet, it's all over the internet, and the extent of the lying that took place to avoid admitting that it was a murder. Now, the footage is sparking the shock and anger that city officials knew it would, despite an unprecedented first-degree murder charge against Van Dyke. And we all know what that is, y'all. Those of you that understand how repression and neoliberalism and just in general police system and police states work, the way they do this is they're going to give this guy, this murderer, a first degree murder charge to quell the anger and stop a possible rebellion from happening of African Americans in the city. So that's the only reason why they gave this guy first degree murder. They saw how disgusting the video was, and they know how upset people are, and they notice that there's a pattern and there's a brimming of political behavior, a lot of anger and nastiness at the working class level that are causing people to get ready to collectivize and rebel against an unjust system. So by giving this person, this murderer, a first degree murder charge, the liberals are already going out and saying, well, now, you know, the system is trying to work with us, so it's okay now. So you don't have to rebel. You don't have to protest. You can have a peaceful march, a peaceful rally now, since we know this guy's got a first degree murder charge. So this is a liberal way of stopping any type of radical movements on the ground against the system when they did that. So initially, so for those that don't know the story, and I'll be quick with this, initially police claimed that there was only one shot that was fired from the gun, not 16 bullets. The cops' account was that McDonald was allegedly acting erratically and armed with what turned out to be a small pocket knife. The autopsy reports claimed that there was PCP in McDonald's bloodstream. It gets crazier though. The police insisted that McDonald lunged at them and that Van Dyke fired in fear for his life. However, the video recorded by the dash cam captured what actually took place. The video footage was released. The city's website crashed from the number of people around the country who watched the silent images of an innocent black teen being murdered. The footage shows McDonald walking down the center of a road, pursued and surrounded by multiple police cruisers, walking and then pursued and surrounded. Van Dyke appears at the edge of the frame, at least 10 feet away from McDonald, who continues to walk past Van Dyke and away from the cop cars. Then Laquan's body can be seen spinning around from the force of the first bullet that hits him. As he falls to the ground, you can still see splatters of blood leaving his body as Van Dyke continues to fire at his form. The Chicago Police Department purposefully suppressed the video. The city council approved a $5 million payout to McDonald's family just 6 months after the shooting, before the family had even filed a civil suit. So you already know what happened. They saw that footage, yep, and they were like, listen, we're all going to jail here if we don't pay this family this money and keep them quiet. So this was widely viewed as an effort to keep the details of a murder, an execution-style murder, under wraps. To further obscure what happened, officers also erased an 86-minute portion of a security tape from a nearby fast food restaurant. Yeah. With a view of the shooting. So y'all, we have some serious racketeer slash mob stuff going on here. They're going in and erasing tapes. They're paying people off. I mean, you talk about supreme thuggery. This is what's going on here from the city of Chicago and the police department. That's supreme thuggery. I mean, seriously.
I was just reading an article this morning talking about how in all these incidents, usually at best, one person gets in any kind of trouble, one officer gets in any kind of trouble at all. And all the other ones that were around there that could have stopped it, could have reported it, could have done the right things, who are basically accomplices in any other situation,
yeah,
are just, oh, that's fine.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's interesting, Gus, is that, you know, the family, when they got
that's why they feel they can fight, do this stuff with impunity except for the video.
Right.
Sorry.
And they got to $5 million with an agreement to keep quiet, yep, you know. But this is what's interesting. The corporate media, of course, done nothing to try to access the dash cam recorder, but an independent journalist brings a suit under the Freedom of Information Act on November 24th, and the cops who unleashed the barrage on Laquan is arrested for murder, and then the dash cam is released, you know. And, you know, this is, I'll tell you what, this also, need to mention Democratic Mayor Rahm Emanuel's involvement in this,
oh, definitely,
too.
Yeah.
You know, and the state's attorney, Cook County State's attorney.
And also the police union.
Well, of course.
Of course.
But you know what's interesting, sure, too, is that, you know, the murderer, Jason Van Dyke, I mean, who is he? I mean, you know, even the FBI, this makes you speculate. Even the FBI has reported that the Ku Klux Klan has had a campaign for years now to infiltrate the nation's police departments and, you know.
Oh, yeah. We can do some history on that.
Yeah.
I mean.
So, and they're trying, of course, make this out to be that, you know, he's a bad apple. He's one of a kind and, you know, yeah, that maybe he was doing steroids.
Except for what? The other half dozen cops that were there and watched him do it and helped him destroy evidence.
Bill, I think
and,
you said it perfect when you said an accessory, because, you know, if this had been a
accomplices.
Yeah, accomplices.
Accessories, accomplices.
Indeed.
But look, no, you're good. But
destroy
just,
evidence.
Yeah, destroy. I mean, yo, this is why we cannot, this is what, ever since 2013, these murders have just gone up. They've skyrocketed. They have been, it's proof that repression is the law of the land now. Repressed democratic rights, repressed protest against an unjust system. This is what's happening here. We have to really, and then again, going back to the Ku Klux Klan part, the majority of the police departments in this country were founded on Ku Klux Klan principles. I mean, even in my city in Atlanta, you had to be a member of the Ku Klux Klan to join the Atlanta Police Department.
No kidding.
Yeah.
How interesting.
The chief of police actually wrote, when he retired, wrote an autobiography that I'm using for my dissertation to show that, yeah, it was a brotherhood, and if you weren't a part of that brotherhood, you could not, if you joined, you were not there for long, and they moved you out if you weren't a Ku Klux Klan member. And if you weren't, you had no chance of mobility. So nobody joined it. It was an unwritten rule to be a KKK member, to be a police department. And he said in his book that this was widespread practice in a lot of police departments. So it's not about them infiltrating. It's that they've always been there,
okay,
and their culture has always been there.
Good point, Gus. Angela?
Yeah, well, you know what? It's not just the police departments. It starts with the Supreme Court itself. They have a lot of members of the Ku Klux Klan there as well.
Really?
But as far
over time,
at least,
in the past, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But at least though, they gave this man murder and something's going to be done about it. So maybe we could look forward to more, you know, more things happening for the people so that, you know, all this killing doesn't continue, because it has skyrocketed. It's like every 2-3 days there's a black person being killed.
Well, let's be honest. They only gave him murder because the video came out. That's the only reason. They actually went through unprecedented feats to cover this up. We don't even know how far this goes. This thing might actually go further than just Emmanuel.
Yeah.
I mean, $5 million
Look at Sandra Bland. She hung herself with a garbage can. Supposedly. A garbage bag, supposedly. And they don't even have garbage cans in the cells.
Yeah, I know, but
they usually take your shoestrings away if you got them, and they take your belt.
Yeah.
And they
do thorough. You know, it's a personal experience, right, Bill?
Right, I know. I've been arrested before, and not for really good protest things, usually for stuff involving alcohol, copious amounts, but yeah, that's what they do, you know, and it's ridiculous. Or these people who are handcuffed in the back of police cars who somehow shoot themselves. By the time you're handcuffed and in the back of a police car, they're real sure that you don't have anything on you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that's just...
And just in terms of moving forward, what does this mean? You, Angela just mentioned that somebody's going to be charged. But again, we can't accept this as being a justice served, because let's be honest, this is one of thousands this year where this has happened, and we all know that the only reason they charged him is to quell a rebellion.
Point. If there hadn't been such a public outrage on this and getting into the streets, I don't think this would have happened at all, or if it did, not that quick.
And we need, and if we're going to have a real, and again, to stop the call for Emmanuel to be indicted for this. I mean, this was clearly a cover up of a murder, and I know nothing's going to happen because the system doesn't really go after the nasty people the way it should.
No, they throw a scapegoat out.
Exactly.
There.
Exactly, throw a scapegoat.
Looks like it had the Abu Ghraib prison, you know.
Yeah, but the people and the people who are protesting in the streets, they need to be more. They need to be outraged. They need to be calling for the job and the freedom of Rahm Emanuel.
Well, they need to go back to when it first started. Then, how about we get every police that's ever shot somebody and get them all and
anything either, because it's a culture. It's not, you can get as many good people that want to be police officers, but they get infested in, and it's like a cancer of American foundation of racism and exploitation against poor people in this country. There's no way that you can keep the same system and replace people in it. The system is going to always corrupt. It's a systemic problem.
And this is part of their training. I mean, their training is not.
Well, that's what I'm going to say. Culture and training is definitely culture, because what culture is the elements of a society or a milieu or whatever that transmits values, the values of that society. Yep. Okay. And if you're training people that they have to expect that anybody that they can, that they have contact with basically has potentially deadly, then yeah, you're going to have that. When you have police forces that will not hire people because they score too high on intelligence tests, you're going to have that.
Yep.
When you are drawing most of your people from a military that for the last dozen years has been performing atrociously in the Middle East
and doing
atrocities, and you're hiring people from that group, then yeah, it's likely you're going to have a culture of this.
Yep.
Whereas, and also, I think every cop should have a bachelor's degree.
Yeah.
Well, you know, at least in larger cities and such.
I think this, of course, begs the question of having more, democratic community control.
And it's always racked up into training too.
Yeah.
And that is a big part of it. And that you have people on TV who are trainers and consultants and so on and so on. And they are always apologizing for this and saying this is the way it has to be because they think so.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But you know, more importantly, we need to have control over the police one way or another.
Right.
I mean, if that means having every city, above the population of, 10,000 having a elected civilian, police review board or whatever. I mean, some mechanism has to be put in place structurally to get rid of, any time a cop murders somebody, an unarmed person.
Yeah. Bill said it at the beginning of the show perfectly. Like the police are only doing these things because we empower them.
Yes.
It's this idea of domination versus control. consent. We're consenting to the fact that we are allowing them to use this type of deadly force against us. But like you say, Dave, we have to have some type of community control, and it has to be community of the people and not some type of representative where the soft liberals and the petty bourgeoisie come in and actually co-opt things so that they can do things for the police, which they have done when they have been civilian review boards. There needs to be actual community from the working people in the community to control and stop the empowerment, to actually depower the police and make them actually
accountable.
Make them accountable.
Well, like, that's going the only back way to the Panthers.
Well, the Panthers on some, they were actually on some other stuff we can go into with that. But we'll get into that.
Turned into government community action programs later on.
Well,
which is a big problem with the left, that we do not maintain our own services like the right wing does, like the right wing churches.
Yep.
They maintain so many services, and that's one of the reasons they could get 1,000 people out there at that church on North Lincoln Avenue.
Yeah, indeed.
You know, and we can't get anybody to do anything.
Okay. Yeah, listen, all sorts of stuff's been going on.
We need some labor, man.
Yeah, internationally. But this was something that I've seen just recently. I didn't even know about this, but it's been a year since an American reporter, Serena Shim, was killed on October 19, 2014. She was investigating the thousands of foreign jihadists who used Turkey as a stepping stone into Syria. Her investigation has led her down a dangerous path.
By the way, Turkey, a NATO power.
Yeah, leading to the procurement of video evidence proving that the U.S. was assisting ISIS after her reporting had already revealed that Turkey was collaborating with ISIS. It is unknown when exactly she had recorded the footage or what happened is because Turkish authorities seized all of her belongings. Even her passport and wedding ring were kept by the Turkish police. Shim and her cousin Judy Irish were apparently hit by a truck as they turned into the opposite lane of a highway access road in their rental car. Shim's family believes the Turkish government was behind the incident. It had earlier claimed that it could not find the vehicle that had caused the accident, only to claim 2 days later that it was a cement truck. And the cousins, both of them were taken to two different hospitals after the accident, some 25 miles apart. Shim was reported dead at the scene, only to have died supposedly again of a heart failure half an hour later. Her family believes that she was taken to a Turkish military base before being sent to the hospital. And despite the deafening amount of coverage for ISIS beheaded American journalists such as James Foley, Shim's death received absolutely no coverage. Not even one major American corporate media company would report her death. Barack Obama would not even mention her death, and the State Department would not investigate her death. Why? Because unlike the others, her death did not fit the official propaganda narrative. You know, so of course, all sorts of things going on. Just a quick mention in regards to that is there was a really interesting story a couple weeks ago in the New York Times about this northern region of Syria called Rojava, which is a Kurdish region in northern Syria that's ruled by militant feminist anarchists.
That's right, Dave. I've been following this story for actually about a year.
Okay,
there's been a lot about the feminist. Their followers, I can't remember the person who's nominally leading them as anarchists, but he's reads a lot of Murray Bookchin.
Yeah, Abdullah Öcalan.
Yeah, okay. He's very influenced by American anarchist Murray Bookchin, who's kind of thought of as a communitarian, but that's kind of getting into inside anarchism.
Yeah, but anyway, baseball. I guess the regime of President Bashar Assad in Syria doesn't officially recognize Rojava's autonomous status, nor does the United Nations or NATO. So in this way, it's as illicit as the Islamic State. But if the reports are to believe, within its borders, the rules of the neighboring ISIS caliphate has been inverted, just completely reversed, in accordance with a philosophy laid down by, as you said, this leftist revolutionary named Abdullah Öcalan. Rojavan women have been championed as leaders, defense of the environment enshrined in the law, and direct democracy enacted in the streets. In Rojava's three cantons, together comprise an area about the size of Connecticut, society is being organized according to the principles of an American anarchist named Murray Bookchin, whose most famous book, The Ecology of Freedom. And basically it's a direct democracy kind of a committee thing. I guess Öcalan, it goes on. But what's interesting is that, in these cantons, there's total religious freedom. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're a Muslim, Christian, or whatever. You have the same equal rights as everyone else. But what's also interesting is they've been the ones, on the ground that have actually been able to, defend themselves and push back ISIS.
They took back Kobani. They are the people who took back Kobani.
Yes.
Okay, they're the only effective forces on the ground against ISIS.
Yes.
And the Russians are the only forces in the air effective against ISIS. American airstrikes, I think they're just having them dump bombs out in the middle of the desert.
Oh, yeah.
You know, or yeah. on just nothing or...
And you see, and you hear a lot of people say, how can that be? How can that be? Well, this fits the history of American foreign policy. Yes. I mean, you think about it. They don't, what the 1%, let's understand, when they come on television, when Hillary Clinton, John Kerry, Barack Obama, whoever the rest of these corporate criminals are that come on the television and say, this is in the security interest of the United States. Well, you gotta immediately ask the question, whose security interest? Whose interest are you really talking about? Well, it's obvious, it's always the corporate interest and the interest of the wealthy 1%. And the point is that they intentionally want to, the State Department wants to intentionally cause chaos, and turmoil in the Middle East so that it breaks down all sorts of societal and political adhesion, if you will. I mean, this goes back to Naomi Klein's a shock doctrine. You know, this is how they push through their agenda, is basically breaking down all the bonds in society and basically creating a situation to where people are welcoming, say, the United States or whoever to come in and restore order, and then they can put into power whoever they want as their puppets, like they did in Afghanistan with Karzad, and basically just open it up, the whole country's natural resources for business to the highest corporate bidder. You know, oil contracts and mining contracts and eventually, you know, cheap, exploitable labor. Yep. This is what American foreign policy is all about. It's not about defending democracy. It's not about protecting American people. It's about enriching and empowering corporate interests. Until you understand that, you are not going to understand what's going on. And what's interesting about this whole situation is, too, is that like in Spain in the 1930s, when I don't want to go into the whole history, where there was actually a international brigade that came to the defense of Spain to defend it against fascism.
The Lincoln Brigade from America.
Yes, and the George Washington Brigade, too, which was primarily African-American.
Oh, okay.
But also...
see, right there, you hear about the Lincoln Brigade, but you don't hear about the
George Washington Brigade. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So
even an anarchist.
Yeah. So anyway, there's now also, I found out that there's also an international brigade that's gone to, that people are traveling from all over the world to Rojava to help fight with these Kurds. And it's interesting because they even have a Facebook site that I just recently visited.
Oh, I got to get to that, man.
Yeah. Some interesting little spin on what you're not going to hear in on CNN, MSNBC, and all those other corporate-owned media outlets.
Well, here's one I came across a couple of days ago, and I wish I could find it. And it's not quite so feminist, but it's like the hot anarchist women fighters.
Okay.
Was a series of a gallery of pictures
of them.
It's
not just women. It's also a lot of men. But the important thing is that women are on equal footing as men. They're commanders and other functions as well. You know,
yeah, that's correct.
You know, unlike ISIS, where women are basically property, basically, you know, and anyone that isn't of the faithful, according to their interpretation of Islam, are basically considered the enemy. So, I mean, it's just a total... Yeah.
Well, and here's what's bizarre with that, is their military leadership is ex-Baathist Iraq top military.
Yes.
Who were secular.
Yes.
Until, see what the United States did... has done and its Western allies over decades' time, starting with Mossadegh in Iran, British just drawing borders wherever they felt like it.
Yeah.
But, has been to destroy democratic and, secular governments in the Middle East.
Yes. Yes. And the invasion of Iraq, I mean, few people dispute that fact, that this is what was the sort of the fuel to the fire that actually, or actually more like the fertile ground that planted the seeds of ISIS, you know, in Syria and Iraq.
Right, and the United States is the people who also, Saddam Hussein himself was a CIA asset.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because there was also a democratic government in Iraq until 1965, I believe it was, when it was overthrown again by another CIA coup. And we could have a long list of that. Yeah. Chile, 1973, Guatemala, 1954.
History of secular.
Yeah. Yes.
But it appears that a lot of the secular strongmen that were supported by the, loosely, the West, just... you know, they were a little bit, got a little bit too independent. Some of them leaned a little bit towards the Soviet Union, such as Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And, Iraq did it at the time.
Look what happened
too.
In Afghanistan. I mean, you know, Afghanistan, they had a coup of, progressive minded military officers against the king. And basically, after that, they started a democratic, society, a left leaning democratic society. They brought in, schools and hospitals in rural areas, gave equal rights to women. And then our CIA goes in and basically funds, trains, and encourages these warlords and these extremist Islamists to start attacking and murdering people who were staffing these hospitals and clinics in the rural areas, and caused such chaos in the country that the government asked for assistance. The Soviet Union did not invade Afghanistan. They were asked to come in by the current government because of the chaos that the CIA caused. And then, of course, the rest is history, unfortunately. You know, and that's why the Afghanistan's never recovered from that, you know, to this day, you know. So, but anyway, it looks like we got a few more minutes here till our caller comes in. Gus, if you got something else, and under the understanding that if it's interrupted, we'll continue it, something,
I know. Always.
What do you got?
Yeah, you know what's going on in Chicago. Now the teachers are gearing up to fight again. The nasty city of Chicago, Rahm Emanuel and the government structure there. I mean, they, from police to education to labor to poverty to housing. I mean, they are just failing in every aspect of the idea of being a so-called leader of a city. But we know that doesn't exist in the American empire. So Chicago teachers are planning for a big downtown rally on November 23rd. Well, they already had, they had this very big rally on November 23rd, amidst the city's threats to lay off thousands of teachers, slash essential programs, and shortchange the teachers' union in contract negotiations. So this protest that they had at Grant Park on the 23rd was near the city's lakefront, and it's part of a campaign to activate teachers and community members around the ongoing contract battle between Chicago Teachers Union and the City of Chicago. So Chicago Teachers Union members have been working under the terms of the previous contract that expired in June of this year. The CTU recently held a non-binding straw vote for a strike in order to send a message to Mayor Rahm Emanuel, who controls the city schools.
Okay, more on that in just a second. Hello, WFT, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Paula Bradshaw calling.
Hi, Paula. David Johnson here. Thank you so much for calling in. We had technical difficulties last weekend, so we couldn't get you on the show. But I thank you so much for calling in, because we really was really looking forward to this and everything. So maybe you could just start by introducing yourself to the listeners.
Okay, my name's Paula. I live in Carbondale, Illinois. I'm a Green Party member, and I run for Congress twice. I am an emergency room nurse, and I have a radio show of my own on our community radio station called Class Matters.
Okay, and what's the community radio station down in Carbondale?
WDBX 91.1, community radio for Southern Illinois.
Okay, great. Well, I love the title of your show, Class Matters, and that really intrigued me when I first sort of found out about you and stuff. And so I'd like you to talk a little bit about, you know, sort of the general orient philosophy focus of your show, and tell us a little bit about some recent programs that you've had.
Okay, well, it's a double entendre. The Class Matters, as in we talk about matters of class.
Mm-hmm.
Because class matters. In other words, we are members of the 99%, the working class, and we look at current events from our point of view, the point of view of the 99% and not the 1%, as they call it now.
Yes.
We actually started before Occupy, so we referred to the capitalist class and the working class.
Okay.
But and we just, well, we pretty much talk about whatever interests us that week, you know, whatever's going on. If it's a holiday, like, say, for instance, Armistice Day that we just went through, which has been changed to Veterans Day to glorify war,
mm-hmm.
we talk about the origins of Armistice Day, you know, the end of World War One, the war to end all wars, and how it started, that people started celebrating November 11th as the Day of Peace, and how it got twisted in the 50s into a day to glorify war.
Okay.
And we do things like that, you know,
mm-hmm.
same with Labor Day, May Day, and then, you know, we talk about events in Syria or global warming or whatever.
Yeah, these are all great and all interconnected issues.
Yes, they are.
So, first of all, what is your program on? And I assume you're broadcast on the internet?
Yes, well, we're a community radio station, so that's touch and go. It costs, I think, $4,000 a year. And it takes us a long time to raise money.
Mm-hmm.
Because we aren't, you know, we don't get free Toyotas and stuff. We
yeah.
have to actually beg for money.
Sure,
so
sure.
So we were off the air for a while, but it's WDBX.org, and we're on the air month to month now, depending on if someone sponsors us.
Okay.
And I'm on at 9:30 Monday morning.
9:30 a.m. Central Time Monday morning. Okay, mm-hmm. Very good. Okay, so let me ask you then, you know, you've hit a bunch of topics that we have talked about as well and everything. What do you see? I mean, since we're kind of coming here into the holidays and the end of the year, what do you kind of think some of the most interesting things that have happened here in the last year have been? I mean, that you maybe have covered on your show and stuff.
Well, I mean, we covered the fossil fuel wars, of course, especially in Ukraine and Syria.
The fossil fuel wars. I like that. Okay. I got to remember that one. Okay. Go ahead. I love that way that's phrased.
You know, the fight over the pipelines and okay. the control of mm-hmm. the gas and oil. And then, of course, we covered global warming because you say it's all connected, and it is all connected. We know that the burning of fossil fuels is cooking the planet. And yet we watch millions of people die over the path of the pipelines so that we can burn fossil fuels even faster. And it's absolutely bizarre if you are a sane human being to watch this going on. It's amazing. It's depressing. And we comment on it.
Okay. Now, you did some coverage. I did a program about what's been going on in the Ukraine. I think that's amongst, like, for instance, in addition to what's going on in the Middle East, I think that's probably been one of the most distorted stories, if you will, about what's really going on there is what's been happening in Ukraine.
Yes. I mean, it's absolutely amazing that an openly Nazi government can have a coup and come to power. I mean, they literally wear swastikas and you know, give the Heil Hitler salute. And the United States media frames this as a democratic revolution. Are you kidding me? How
yes.
on earth could you possibly frame it that way? And then they promptly start bombing the people in the eastern Ukraine who said, no, we fought the Nazis 60 years ago. We're not going to, you know, we want nothing to do with this.
Mm-hmm.
They start bombing them. And the United States media frames it as, well, I don't even know, as a good thing, right?
Yes.
They're bombing their own people, and that's good. But Assad, oh, he's bombing his own people, and that's bad.
Yeah.
It's hard to keep up with the hypocrisy. You know, like Lily Tomlin, I always quote her, no matter how cynical I get, I can't keep up.
Yeah, I can relate to that for sure. Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting. Now I see I'm a subscriber to Netflix. Now they've even got some propaganda docudrama on Netflix, supposedly making out that, you know, this whole thing, you know, this whole violent coup, let's call it what it is, this violent coup that was
right.
sponsored by the CIA and the State Department
right.
Was somehow some people's, you know, revolution, you know, for all the betterment, you know. I mean, it's just amazing the propaganda. Oh, and let's not forget about Joe Biden's son getting a share in the soon privatized oil company there, which used to belong to the Ukrainian people. I mean, it's surreal. Actually, it's so surreal. I mean, it's just like, you know, whatever you could do to, you know, basically going in and taking the whole real story and basically saying just the opposite about everything is pretty much what the corporate media has done, you know.
As you know, and we know, that the most of the media in the United States is owned by only six corporations.
Yep.
And they pretty much spout the same party line. If you can turn on any station, no matter if it's owned by General Electric or Viacom or Rupert Murdoch, and they will pretty much be spouting the same line. I mean, they each have their own, and the NPR for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
They have their own spin on it, like NPR does it very smoothly. And
yes.
And Fox, you know, they scream and yell, but it's the same line.
Mm-hmm.
You
Indeed.
Know? So that's why community radio is so important.
Indeed, we can definitely relate to that, and we can also relate to, you know, some of the, you know, how should I put it, the struggles we have to stay on the air, but, you know, man, I can't imagine out there, you know, even though we really should be trying to get, you know, more and more listeners to tune in, I can't imagine, you know, out there in the country of not having any community radio stations, I've been trying to, you know, kind of make, I've been doing some research and trying to get a list of all the different community radio stations. I mean, real community radio stations, those like yours and ours.
Well, you mean the United States or?
In the United States, yes.
Well, I imagine you could go to the NFCB website probably.
Well, yeah, Bill, but I'm saying is actually going into each finding out where a community radio station is, going to their website and seeing what kind of programs they have.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying, but you can find a list of them probably at NFCB, and then you can do that.
Right.
Well, someone said that there's only two in Illinois.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, however, there are stations that are somewhat similar that do, such as Northwestern has a radio station, which runs a labor show.
Yeah, Labor Express, yeah.
Yeah, and well, so on.
But guess what? They've been evicted.
Well, yeah, but I mean, they aren't real community radio stations, but there are, in different parts of the country, there are several university stations that do run a lot of, leftist content and worker-oriented stuff.
Yeah.
Besides that.
But, you know,
as Dave says, they're not totally independent.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, where am I going with that? Nowhere.
All right. Well, thanks for coming. But anyway, yes. So, I wanted to like, you know, have you call in today to basically let people out there, our listeners, know that you exist and everything. And I'd like to see, you know, more, communication and, connections amongst, community radio stations, public affairs shows like ours, you know, and yours, communicate more. I mean, you know, so we both kind of know what's going on with each other and, who knows, maybe someday have, a nationwide conference or something, you know, I don't know. But I just think that, you know, it's so much in this society, you know, part of the tactic of the ruling class is to make us think that we're alone, very alone, you know, and I just think it's empowering, if for no other reason, to know that there's other people out there like you, you know, like ourselves, you know, doing, doing what we can.
I agree with you, and I think that's why they're making all these worried noises about the internet, because that is the same sort of thing where for my entire life, I only got the news, as you did, as all of us did, top down, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was beamed into our houses, whether by TV or radio, or it came in the newspaper. And you had no idea what other people thought. Maybe the newspaper had letters to the editor, but the TV and the radio, you had absolutely no way of knowing what other people were thinking, except for, you know, call-in talk shows. But with the internet, you have access to people all over the world. And you can instantly, like, for instance, we were talking about the Ukraine and Syria. You know, we are being fed a total 180-degree nonsense about both those places. And the reason I know that is because I have friends, you know, in Greece. I have friends in Ukraine. And they put stuff on the internet, and I read it, you know,
mm-hmm.
and that's why, and our ruling overlords, that's what I like to call them. I got that from an Onion article years ago.
Okay.
Our ruling overlords don't like it, and that's why they are making lots of noise about, you know,
propaganda.
We're losing the propaganda war.
Needing to regulate the internet and all that. Yeah,
exactly.
We know what their regulation will be.
Yeah.
You know, it'll be like China, you know, to where, websites are banned and all, you know, all sorts of things are censored. And, well, I guess now France has entered into that, which is pretty frightening.
Well, nothing like a terrorist attack to make repression easy.
Yes, indeed.
But I do agree with you. It's nice. I think we should network. It is nice to know there's other people actually organizing out there and putting things out week after week after week. And it would be good to know what other people are doing.
Okay. Well, listen, Paula, thank you so much for calling in, and good luck with staying on the air and stuff, because we know from our experiences here it is a struggle at times and everything.
Oh,
so again, your show's on. Can you tell us when your show's on again?
Monday morning, 9:30 a.m.
And you can access that?
WDBX 91.1. And you can access it at WDBX.org at least this month. I don't know about next month.
Okay, very good. Paula, thank you so much for calling in.
Oh, you're welcome. Bye-bye.
Okay, take care. All right. Okay, you're back. You're listening to the World Labor Hour on listener-supported community radio station WFT. And I just have a quick public service announcement here. This evening, there's going to be a fundraiser for the locked-out workers at Clifford and Jacobs in Champaign. Anyway, it's called the Lockout Rockout, and will be occurring today at 5 p.m., and it's happening at the Plumbers and Steam Fitters local union hall at 1005 North Dunlap, which is basically Route 45 South Neal and Savoy, and the building is just south of the CVS in the corner of Route 45 and Curtis Road. Entry includes dinner and some activities. Dinner will be provided, and anyway, there's going to be some music provided as well. So if you can, get out and support the locked out Clifford and Jacobs workers here in Champaign. So, and also let you know that today and every Saturday from 2 to 3 o'clock is Not Another Sports Show with fellow worker Neil Parthen, and that's on WRFU, our sister station in Urbana, at 104.5 FM. And also the Sunday and every Sunday you can tune in to Labor's Worldview TV from 4 to 5 p.m. on Comcast Channel 6 and live on the internet at UrbanaPubliceTelevision.org. Okay, Bill, you had some something interesting you wanted to share with the listeners today.
Oh, yeah. If you do go out to the local 149 for that fundraiser, I helped do the landscaping there about 25 years ago. So,
okay.
All right. No, anyway.
Did you write your name somewhere on the concrete or something?
No, I didn't. But they, what I want to bring up is alternet.org, which is a pretty decent website for kind of left-leaning news. And it's a little bit better than, say, Salon or such. But they have an article here by Paul Buckheit, who's somebody who you should pay attention to when it comes to a lot of economic issues. And it's called Five Depressing Signs America Just Isn't the Country It Used to Be. Anyway, one sign here, according to Paul, is number one, a House bill would view corporate crimes as, quote, honest mistakes. Wealthy conservatives are pushing a bill that would excuse corporate leaders from financial fraud, environmental pollution, and other crimes that America's greatest criminals deem simply reckless or negligent. The Heritage Foundation attempts to rationalize, saying somebody who simply has an accident by being slightly careless can hardly be said to have acted with a, quote, guilty mind. Oh, wow. Anyway, moving on. Number two is unpaid taxes of 500 companies could pay for a job for every unemployed American. For 2 years, at the nation's median salary of $36,000 for all 8 million unemployed. Citizens for Tax Justice reports that Fortune 500 companies are holding over $2 trillion in profits offshore to avoid taxes that would amount to over $600 billion. Our society desperately needs infrastructure repair, but 8 million potential jobs are being held hostage beyond our borders. And I'll say that as a laborer, that $36,000 number,
mm-hmm.
Well, if you're working about half-time, you know, seasonal, that's about, you know, what you might make as a laborer. Mm-hmm. So this isn't, you know, this would be infrastructure, union built, you know, might be a little more expensive than, Citizens for Tax Justice are looking at.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay, maybe it'd only be 7 million people.
Okay.
Making really good wages with benefits.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Number three, almost 2/3 of American families couldn't afford a single pill of a life-saving drug. Mm. 62% of polled Americans said that they couldn't cover a $500 repair bill, okay? So apparently I don't think they were asked about a specific pill, but he's showing, bringing this up. For, well, as a matter of fact, remember my story from a few weeks ago about the $506 tube of skin cream?
Yes.
Prescription skin cream? Okay. Right there. I couldn't really afford it, and I had to jump through a bunch of hoops to get my insurance paid for.
Yeah, and you're insured. You know, more,
right.
That is, unless you have a bad year and you're
but
out.
But I hadn't been working enough, so I had to self-pay, and I had to jump, you know, because I was running out of the medicine right at the time that the bill came due.
Yeah.
All right. And they go ahead and cancel your insurance anyway because they don't know if any money's going to come in or not. You know, so.
All about the money.
Right. All right. So right there. But anyway, 62% of Americans can't deal with something that's going to cost $500
or
no matter what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Any emergency.
Yeah.
Number four, violent crime down, but the prison population doubles.
Yeah, man, wow.
FBI statistics.
But police murders
are on the rise.
Quadruple.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really weird.
Yeah.
But, FBI statistics.
That's neoliberalism. That's how it works.
Yeah.
Confirm a dramatic decline in violent crime since 1991, yet the number of prisoners has doubled over approximately the same period. Meanwhile, white collar prosecutions have been reduced by over a third. And as noted above, corporate leaders are steadily working toward 100% tolerance for their crimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, funny how nobody went to jail over the, you know, the whole bank bailout in 2008. Where Iceland, I think they jailed, I think over a dozen. That's
yeah,
a small country. They jailed over a dozen bankers for doing something similar that crashed their economy.
And yeah. They told the foreign banks to go to hell. They weren't paying them back.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay, number five. This is it. One in four Americans suffer mental illness, but mental facilities are cut by 90%. According to the National Alliance on Mental Illness, 25% of adults experience mental illness in a given year, with almost half of the homeless population so inflicted. Yet from 1970 to 2002, the per capita number of public mental health hospital beds plummeted from over 200 per 100,000 to 20 per 100,000 after the recession state cutbacks continued. That leaves prison or death by police as the only option for many desperate Americans, as it is obvious that many of these people, no matter what color they are, that are killed by the police in the videos that you see are not all there and could probably use some help.
Yeah.
Besides, and quite a few of these deaths are calls to the police to help get control of a mentally ill person. I have read story after story of people calling, family members calling 911 to get help with a mentally ill, family member, and the police comes and kills them. You know?
Yeah, indeed. And, it's just unbelievable.
Paul Buchheit, Paul Buchheit teaches economic inequality at DePaul University. He is the founder and developer of the websites usagainstgreed.org, which I haven't seen yet, payupnow.org, and wrappinghistory.org.
Okay.
And he's the editor and main author of American Wars, Illusions and Realities at Clarity Press. And he can be reached at paul@usagainstgreed.org. So this guy, I've seen several articles by him over the last few years, and I think he's worth looking for.
Okay, that's some really interesting stats there, Bill. I wanted to let listeners know, too, about something that just happened recently. Gus talked about in the previous show about, well, you were there, I guess, the Black Student Revolutionary. What's the official name?
Black Students for Revolution.
Yeah, Black Students for Revolution. Yeah. Yeah. Had a rally on the quad at the University of Illinois campus. Yeah. And then there was like some, something, there was
on the Facebook page?
Yeah, there's some Facebook page popped up about, white student unions who, I mean, all sorts of horrible things. But I wanted to,
About that. Those are sock puppets.
Probably.
Yeah, yeah, they are, definitely. They're just popped up. They're individual people. There's not really any organizations behind it.
Yeah, they
there's
are.
Not. He's right. Yeah, there's not like a group of students at the University of Illinois.
Thanks for clarifying.
The problem is when you have ridiculous liberal and conservative media like the Washington Post that puts the stupid link to the page on their news story.
No kidding.
So that could help.
So they got thousands of likes from across the country on that page blew it up into a very popular.
They should have known better than that if they were concerned about doing the right thing.
You know, they're sensationalists.
Yeah.
And whoever works for the Washington Post, you're a sensationalist. I hope you're listening.
Yeah.
Because what you did was you put not only, you gave them, you made us, the Black Students Revolution, an object of our own narrative instead of the subject by blowing that page up, but you also possibly put the safety of people's lives in jeopardy by doing that.
You were the one who reached out to the Washington Post, the New York Times.
They reached out to us and we refused to comment. So
I liked your subject object observation there.
Yeah, that's
becoming the object instead of the subject.
Yeah, like all the national news stories were talking about the White Student Union and when we, and they were doing something in response to a rally on campus, and they kept mispronouncing it as a Black Lives Matter rally. This was not a Black Lives Matter anything. This was the Black Students Revolution, which is a student organization.
Yes.
And student coalition. And then all these national stories were just talking about us as in the periphery of this creation of this white union thing. And again, you're making that's the problem with what they do with African Americans in this country. They make us objects, faceless victims and objects of our own narrative. And we need to be, we are the subjects. So I want to give a shout out to the Daily Illini for printing the best story I've seen of all the national stories that have been about us. They did a perfect job of actually making us the subject and what the rally was about and what we're calling for in the ending of racial oppression on the campus. So shout out to the Daily Illini, particularly Charlotte.
Okay, Angela?
Modern day slavery, right?
That's yeah. What you call it. So yeah, I got a little public service now here. This is from a press release. It's from the Central Illinois Industrial Workers of the World in response to the statement in response to the ongoing racist backlash at the Black Student Solidarity Rally that took place at the University of Illinois November 18th, 2015. The Central Illinois Industrial Workers of the World expressed full love and solidarity for the organization Black Students for Revolution, as capitalism, which thrives on human inequality and white supremacy, are deeply historically intertwined systems of oppression. There is no effective anti-capitalist struggle without anti-racist struggle. White supremacy has long been an effective tool that the capitalist class uses to keep the working classes weak and divided. This being the case, the destruction of white supremacy is a necessary component of the struggle for all working class people. There is no working class liberation without black liberation. We consider Black Students for Revolution to be our comrades in struggle against systemic oppression. We harshly condemn all racist attacks against black organizers and black students. We harshly condemn all attempts to establish a white student union or any similar despicable efforts to intimidate, vilify, and target black students. We stand in full solidarity with black organizations at UIUC, Urbana University, Illinois campus, and Parkland College. We consider an injury to them to be an injury to us. We don't stand by in silence while white racists attempt to intimidate and terrorize radical black organizers. We make this statement not as an act of charity, but as an act of elementary justice, solidarity, and struggle for working class emancipation. All of respect for Black Students for Revolution, Central Illinois Industrial Workers of the World. Now, that statement in there about intimidation, there were some very intimidating remarks on that White Student Union Facebook page. And what I remember saying, now we know the faces and some of the names of these people who hate white people, the black students who hate white people. Yeah. You know, they were trying to, first of all, make it out like this was an anti, you know, it was an anti-white event, which was nothing further from the truth.
Exactly. I mean, that there was the people who put that crap on there obviously didn't go to the rally or listen to what we were saying, because the only two things we were saying was that there was a structural problem at the university that is based in foundational white supremacy. There was no individual white people called out. Nobody said anything anti-white. And the other message was having pride and black culture, celebrating black racial pride. That's all that was at the entire event.
Yeah.
So it was just embarrassing to see somebody put that garbage up. But the idea of monitoring and getting the faces and names of the black students that were there, I mean, those were tactics that the White Citizens Council used after Brown versus Board of Education as a white resistance movement to terrorize and kill black people that supported the civil rights movement. I mean, that's clearly in the history.
Yeah.
So again, at that moment, that's when the university, if they were a real university that cared about the quality of life of people, would have stepped in, found out who created that page, which we know they could do easily, mm-hmm. and have that student expelled. Because like Bill said, it was definitely just one student that put something up.
Well, it's not necessarily a student. It could be anybody.
Yeah.
You know, any racist person could put something like that up that has any familiarity with any of the universities. As a matter of fact, several pages, I believe, for several different universities were created, and they could all be by one person.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, and that's why these things should not be given, you know, and what's sad is they could lead to the creation of an organization is the scary part.
And that's what the
you get
Post
these people, communicating to each other on this page. And about the cameras and stuff, it's really strange. And this goes back to the Staley struggle of 20 years ago. And that is, I remember going to those things. I had a camera. I had a still camera. I've always been into photography, semi-professional, you might say. And, there would always be a whole bunch of people on both sides with a whole bunch of cameras, video and still cameras. The strikers were, or the locked out workers were making videos in St. Louis. And
the police were there videotaping too.
And,
so.
Well, the private security firms definitely were, and they would be videotaping for that purpose, you know, to see who's there. And there was also a network through the state police at that time through many labor disputes that were going on. Peoria, Charleston, Decatur, mm-hmm. throughout central Illinois. And this was manifested in the shootings, was it yesterday in Minneapolis, where there were, apparent racists, white racists, who were there with cameras. There were like four of them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they were approached, you know, people thought they might have been on their side and asking them to go ahead and join the demonstration, and they didn't want to do it. And they started leaving, and people were kind of following them, and they turned around and shot people. Okay. And, number one, if you think somebody might be a racist who's videotaping you, remember, these right-wing crazy people are the big Second Amendment solution, stand your ground people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You don't want to pursue them. It's likely, I'm serious, it's likely that they are armed and dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, so yeah. Just take that for a warning, man. Anybody that walks away like that, yeah. Let them go. Don't.
Yeah, that's... I agree. That's what the biggest thing is that, you know, the university, we know for a fact that even if it wasn't a student, they can find the person that created the page. And the Washington Post and these other sensationalist national media outlets, they did create those because after Washington Post printed that article with the link, there were multiple universities that created white student youth group. Well, they had them at the university, whether they were students or not, but they were created because of Washington Post sensationalism and also placing the black rally people and the black oppression stuff, at the periphery
mm-hmm.
of what's going on. So yeah, it's unfortunate that became the national story, is the creation of the white union and not what they were responding to, which was our cause to end oppression at the University of Illinois, not just for students, but for staff, mm-hmm. but also and as well as professors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had seen on my Facebook page, somebody shared it to my page, but there's a white guy and he's in Texas. He has on a cowboy hat.
Mm-hmm.
He has a gun on the porch as well.
Yeah.
And he says he makes this whole documentary about how blacks come into Texas. He said that the next blacks that come to Texas trying to have a rally, he said that'll be the last time. And he said, and they're talking about trying to name a street after Sandra Bland. He said, that's not going to happen. Talking about how she was on drugs and everything. But he picked up this long shotgun and he cocked it.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, he wants some more black people to come to Texas. And he said that'll be the last time.
Well, maybe we should introduce him to the Huey P. Newton Gun Club in Houston.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's open carry out there for shotguns.
Yeah.
So that's why he was able to do that.
Sure.
But, yeah, that's...
Up against somebody that's... These people, I mean, they're cowards, basically. It's one thing, you know, taking weapons. They go armed.
That's what the whole thing about guns.
Not unarmed. Yeah, but let them go up against somebody that's equally armed and see how...
Okay, but that's just it. Anybody who thinks that they need to have a gun, I'm serious. I live in the country by myself. I have for years and years and years. And I just have never felt the need to have a gun where somebody could easily come out to my house at any time and slit my throat and kill me and take everything I have.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never been afraid.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not
afraid either, Bill, but
I'm more afraid of cops.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's.
Well, you know what? I don't want to, I know you're going to turn this into a big debate.
I'm not an anti-gun yeah. person. Well, I just don't understand why people want them so much, except that to me, they're like guitars. They're, some of them are really nice pieces and mm-hmm. tools, and they're nice to hold on to and to work with,
mm-hmm.
you know? But beyond that, I don't see the appeal. I don't know why. I'm not anti-gun. I don't want to get rid of them. I just don't see the appeal.
Well, there are some people obsessed with them, you know?
It's the history.
Yeah.
I mean, this country was founded in its love and use of guns. That's something that I think that Michael Moore's...
Well, yeah, Bowling for Columbine.
I'm not
an anti-gun movie either.
And I'm not really a Michael Moore fan like that because I do believe that he's somewhat as... He goes into liberal stuff sometimes.
Well, he kind of screws up. Every movie he does one thing.
Bowling for Columbine, though, is his masterpiece. I mean, mean, that movie really is so overlooked in looking at the problems with how guns should be addressed. Gun reform is not going to do anything because there is a cultural, there's a cultural attraction and obsession with guns in this country. And it goes back to the 1600s and the 1700s with the American Revolution and then the creation of the Second Amendment and the use of guns throughout our history to be successful in regressing and taking things from people. I mean, that's exactly where it comes from. That's what the history of it is from. Anytime in history, you cannot find a time when we didn't solve a problem in America from using a gun to take something from somebody or to fix a problem. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. We're talking 300 plus years where this thing has always existed. So all of a sudden now these anti-gun reformers are going to come out and say pass new gun laws. That's not going to stop what's happening with guns. Guns have always been used to exploit and take things from people in American history. That's the only thing our country has been founded on.
And I want to bring up something. It was by I don't know if this guy is still alive. His name is George Gerbner. So if you want to look this stuff, look up George Gerbner. And he had a theory, God, what was it? The mean something or other. All right. Him and a team of people have been conducting studies since the early 1970s on violence on television and people watching that violence. And consistently, and they've been doing this for decades, they've adjusted things, they've responded to criticisms, and what they consistently find over and over and over is the more TV, and at this point I'll just say the more media that you consume, the more scared you are. Oh, it's called the mean world syndrome. Mm-hmm. And if the more people will say just huge overestimate how many people in the United States work in law enforcement. Because that's what they see all the time. Every other TV shows, law enforcement. Number two, they wildly overestimate all criminal statistics, even the ones in their immediate neighborhood. And so on and so forth. And it goes on. And that is a big problem. We've talked about culture a lot today.
Yeah.
And where is the biggest purveyor of culture in the United States? It's the mass media. Yep. More than the education, more than religion, than most other cultural institutions. Mm-hmm. And they'll say, this is what people want. They want CSI. We got to have 15 CSI shows.
Yeah.
You know, it's like what they're watching, they're interested in the procedure there. That's like zombie movie TV shows. They're not about zombies. They're about people. Mm-hmm. You know, the CSI could be some other really interesting thing that doesn't have to be police.
Well, that's the thing. You see, that's the problem with a lot of liberals. They think they're going to solve all these gun violent deaths by banning all guns. It's not going to happen. Not going to happen. As typical liberals, they're ignoring the root cause of the problems. The extreme poverty in this country and inequality. Also, the glorification of violence, as you both have very well said. How many years has the United States been at war? Glorifying war. Police movies, you know, all this violent films, violent video games. And then you throw in the whole thing about the mental illness statistics you threw in there about all the prescription drugs a lot of people are on. And you throw all that into the soup and, you know, is there any wonder we got the problems we've got, you know?
Well, here's Dave. I just don't really. There's nobody who loves a violent movie more than I do. I mean, I get into the crazy.
I like movies about revolution.
You know, like crazy Korean movies and stuff. You know,
I just saw The Hunger Games. That's why I said that.
The
new one.
I saw The Devil and. Did you talk about like those current, like those new extreme Korean movies where
that probably make Tarantino blanch, man.
Yeah, like I saw The Devil. That's one that's.
I haven't seen that. I'll look for it. But anyway, I mean, I love first person shooter games. I don't play them that much anymore, but in the arcades, I always liked playing them. But I'm not. You know, but I don't want to go to war. I don't want to kill people.
Yeah.
It's more than that, Dave. It's more than that.
It's all part of the soup, but I think you brought up a very good point too, Bill, is about this whole thing about be afraid. Be very afraid.
That's right. It's all about, it's not so much about being violent. It's about
be afraid of people that aren't of your same ethnic background. You know, be afraid of the person down the street. You know, that's encouraged.
Be afraid of that black man.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's how the police that
demon,
runs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That young demon black man in Ferguson.
Demon?
Yeah, that's what that cop said. He literally said that he was a demon.
He looked like a demon to him.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that was, yeah.
You know, they're scared because black people are strong-willed and, you know, we've been through so much over all these years and we still stand. We know how to survive and all that.
And,
you know,
and then just the collectiveness of any oppressed group can always lead to damage or the regression of a ruling class or oppression at any stance. So, I mean, the ruling class is not the ruling class because they're stupid. They understand the dialectical relationship between resistance and oppression. That's why the more resistance and democracy we show on the ground, the more repression they're going to show, which is why police violence has gone up as we called it out and had rebellions against it. I mean, it's dialectically related. I mean, yeah. It's right there. They know this thing. Boy, and it's going to continue. Yeah. Especially after this video. Now.
Yeah, this is getting great. We're, you know what, guys?
Okay,
we're 10
I do
minutes
have,
over.
I got to say something, though. I really do. I am just, this is something that has always amazed me for God, since maybe I was a kid. When I look at the history of this country, and we have not had a continuing series of terrorist attacks for like 100 years from African Americans, I am just amazed when you look at the things that white people go out and kill people over. You know, it's just, I mean, they're also worried about Muslims. We've been screwing up people over there since the 1950s at least with Mossadegh in Iran.
Yeah,
why have we not, and we haven't had terrorist attacks or anything like that for so long.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just amazing how calm the enemies of the American establishment or the Western establishment are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how little that they go out. Meanwhile, you get people that go out and go crazy with guns over people who aren't born yet. You know, right? Planned Parenthood was attacked and was held. I mean, is that even, that was going on last night. Did they finally?
Was that Colorado?
Yes.
Yeah, they got the guy. I mean, he had a very long gun battle with police, killing a cop and two other people. And they were able to talk him down to putting his weapon down, and now he is in prison. Hey, now.
Yes.
Take him to Burger King and get him a meal like they did the other guy?
I mean, that is ridiculous. I know he got some food when they took him into the interrogation room.
Yeah, that's like, yeah, that was the joke. Yeah, if he was a white guy, they would have bought him a sandwich. But, you know, Gus, I've heard this over many, many times from, African Americans. It's like, they hear about some horrendous crime, and they go, thank God it wasn't a black man, you know, because they're just so afraid of the, you know, the cultural retribution they would receive compared to anybody else. But I've
wow.
And it's the same situation with those bikers, the biker man.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
The shootout. Yeah.
The biker shootout. I mean, nothing has come from that. And we're talking about a massacre of people.
Right. And you won't find any more racist people in the United States than bikers. I'm serious. Yeah, I mean, people who are in bike gangs like that, there's a reason why they're separate African American and Latino bike gangs, because the white bike gangs won't let them in.
Yeah, and that's in the show Sons of Anarchy too.
Oh, yes.
If those have seen that,
and I hate that. Why is it the son? At least it's not the Sons of Anarchism.
Okay. All right. Man, we got a roll here and we went over a little bit, but
they're the Sons of Tyranny.
The Sons of Satan. Okay. You've been listening to the World Labor Hour. This is for Community Station WT in Champaign. Stay tuned for the Union Edge. Until next week, be safe and power the people. Okay, take care.